doing a few texts from the seventh chapter of the third canto. Vidura's discussion of transcendental knowledge with Maitreya Muni. And this is the section where Vidura expresses his gratitude and his accomplishment due to the mercy of Maitreya Muni. Just like at the end of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna asks Arjuna, have you understood everything? Is your illusion now dispelled? And Arjuna gives the famous reply, Nashtamoha Smritiranta. Kadishe Bachanantava. My illusion is all gone. By the mercy of your words, I'll accept those words and act on them. Because Krishna had said, I've explained everything to you. Deliberate on it fully, and you taste to see tata kuru. Think about it and do what you like. Independence is not trampled upon by Krishna. Translation. Vidura said, O powerful sage, my lord, all my doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. My mind is now perfectly entering into them. Purport. The science of Krishna, or the science of God and the living entities, is so subtle that even a personality like Vidura has to consult persons like the sage Maitreya. Doubts about the eternal relationship of the Lord and the living entity are created by mental speculators in different ways. But the conclusive fact is that the relationship of God and the living entity is one of the predominator and the predominated. The Lord is the eternal predominator, and the living entities are eternally predominated. Real knowledge of this relationship entails reviving the lost consciousness to this standard. And the process for such revival is devotional service to the Lord. By clearly understanding from authorities like the sage Maitreya, one can become situated in real knowledge, and the disturbed mind can thus be fixed on the progressive path. Om Agyana Chimadandasya. Chakshun litam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Jai shri shri raja ananta shri advaita
srivasani gaur bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Our theme has been association with devotees. Can we get a little more air in here, if possible? How association with devotees is not just some kind of social club or group of true believers who pat each other on the back. Association of those dedicated to the eternal is meant to inspire us in relinquishing our grip on matter and increasing our attachment for Krishna. So the association of devotees, as we've been explaining, is meant to be dynamic. And dynamic experiences are produced. We heard in the purport that the transcendental knowledge can be quite subtle, especially understanding Krishna's qualities, Krishna's lila and activities, and his everything about his personalism can be quite daunting because we are conditioned. That means we're not accustomed to acknowledging that kind of reality. But in the association of devotees, when you hear about Krishna in proper association, transcendental experiences are triggered. And we actually develop a taste for hearing about Krishna. This is stated later in the third canto. Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hirtkarna rasayana kata taj joshanan ashu bhavagavartmani chantaratiya bhakti anukramishati. Lord Kapiladeva explains this to his mother Devahuti. In the association of the sat, it means those who are dedicated to experiencing the eternal supreme absolute truth, talks about Krishna become even more powerful, in other words, than reading on your own. The transcendental dynamics become magnified when you're hearing and discussing Krishna in the association of practitioners. You might say there's some kind of transcendental field created, which surcharges any discussions about Krishna. So, Bhavanti Hirtkarna Rasayana Kata. Lord Kapiladeva explains that those talks become very pleasurable to the ear and to the heart. Everyone wants their heart to feel fulfilled, yes? You make various arrangements to satisfy your heart. But simply hearing about Krishna in the association of genuine practitioners creates a pleasure for the ear and then the heart. The sound vibration rolls off the tongue, goes into the ear, and penetrates to the deepest caverns of the heart. So this is something that everyone should aspire to experience, how indeed their heart can be fully satisfied and fulfilled just by hearing about Krishna. Tajoshana ashu upavarga vartmani. When you get that experience of simply hearing Krishna's name, his form, hearing about his form, his qualities, his pastimes. When you get that experience triggered in your heart, then you should know the door to liberation, freedom from material existence, has swung wide open. This is laboratory experience. This is not theory. Of course, as we spoke yesterday or the day before, bhakti yogis, in their mature stage, are not so concerned with freedom from material existence, because as long as they have emotional service, they are situated in the spiritual world. But that's a realization that comes in the mature stage. This is described, this realization is described throughout Bhagavatam. It is no secret. Yet it takes some time to ripen, for the practitioner to ripen. Now, what is the difference between a neophyte practitioner and a mature practitioner? There is a difference, and in one sense, there's not a difference. Obviously, there's an extraordinary difference in realization and experience. One is further progressed in the relationship, reviving the relationship with Krishna. Then again, is there a difference between the unripe fruit and the ripe fruit? If you've got some fruit trees, I believe here they planted some fruit trees. So when the fruit trees are bearing fruit, you don't criticize the unripe fruit. What is this fruit tree? It has unripe fruit. This is nonsense. You don't criticize because you know if the tree goes on with its normal development, in time, the fruits will become ripe. So unripe, ripe is just a question of time. So similarly, for practitioners who stick to the path of bhakti, it's just a question of time before what you read in the Bhagavatam starts to dawn. The Lord Kapila Deva is describing Taj Joshna Ashu Apavarga Bhagavati. The doorway to liberation swings wide open, even though you're actually in the mature stage, not so concerned with it at all. The door of liberation. Shradhadatir Bhakti Anukramishyati. You develop firm conviction and attraction to devotional service. Rati. Sometimes Rati is described as love for Krishna, loving attraction for Krishna. But also it can be described as attraction to Krishna's loving service. And guess what? If you're attracted to Krishna's loving service, you are attracted to Krishna. Actually, there's no way you can approach Krishna without loving service. So the devotee focuses on developing attraction to loving service to Krishna. And that is the same thing as loving Krishna. As you mature, you begin to realize that. In the beginning stages of your developing attraction, you are attracted to the service without so much perceiving that the service is not different from Krishna. But as you ripen in the sun of bhakti, as your fruit ripens, you begin to understand, you begin to perceive that the service is not different from Krishna. And you begin to detect the presence of the beloved in all the service that you do. Just like, even though the sky is cloudy now, the sun is actually out. We don't detect it. But if you could go above the clouds in an airplane, you would see that the sun is there. I had that experience too much. Too much flying above the clouds. So indeed, you'll see the sun is out. So similarly, as you ripen in bhakti, you will experience the service to the beloved and the beloved. Shradhadatir bhakti anukramishyati. Then your bhakti becomes full-blown, fully developed. You can define bhakti in two ways, and both are correct. Because it is the means and the end. You can define bhakti as the process for advancing to love of Krishna. And that's true. And also you can define bhakti as a full-blown loving devotion for Krishna. So bhakti, in its terminology, contains both the means and the end. So you practice bhakti in order to attain a goal. And what is that goal? It's bhakti. Let us talk about the experience that you get when, by hearing, you start, after hearing, you start applying what you've heard. Vidura is testifying about that experience. He's saying to Maitreya, "O powerful sage," he calls him Bhagavan. Now, this causes some confusion. This term, not what Vidura is saying, but the term Bhagavan undergoes confusion in India. As you know, Bhagavan, in its deepest meaning, refers to one who possesses all opulences. The six opulences you know about: wealth, strength, renunciation, beauty, fame, knowledge. So Bhagavan possesses unlimitedly all these six opulences. But sometimes devotees are called Bhagavan, not because they possess unlimited opulences like Krishna, but because they are servants of Bhagavan. So just like sometimes Yamaraj is referred to as Bhagavan, he's a very powerful servitor who deals with living entities who have been sinful, and he awards them their next destination. So here, Maitreya Muni is described as Bhagavan, but that doesn't mean he's God. It has become all too common in India for someone to pronounce themselves as Bhagavan. It's very good for donations. And if people are not educated in transcendental knowledge properly, they fall for this. Because in India there's, even to this day, there, especially in the villages outside the cities, there's a natural respect for anyone who presents themselves as a saintly person with all the external markings, saffron cloth, sometimes long hair, sometimes shaved head. You carry a stick and a water pot. So the people are very conscious of the external markings out of simplicity. And so then if such a apparent sadhu, wandering mendicant, says, my name is Bhagavan such and such, meaning not that I am the servant of the Supreme, but we are all the Supreme, and unfortunately people become victimized. But as you heard in the purport today, the transcendental reality is that there is one predominator and everyone else is predominated. As if you're not hearing this in terms of the spiritual knowledge you're getting, then you've totally missed the point. Of course, this is what the conditioned soul doesn't want to hear. Ekale Ishwar Krishna Asabhavrija. There's one Ishwar, one controller, everyone else is the servant. Who wants to hear that? We want to do yoga, we want to meditate, we want to study speculative metaphysical texts, but to hear that we are servants and predominated? Retro. Sometimes this reality is derided as a masculine patriarchal religion. Or sin-based religion. We should be beyond all that now. We should be beyond this concept that there's a predominator and that there's sin. Of course, Bhagavad presentation of sin is much more profound and technical than that concept as present in Western religion. Nevertheless, it is a fact. There are activities that will bring you horrendous reactions. So whether you want to call it bad karma or sin or the fact is that there are such reactions to actions. Why is it that we have this aversion to understand that there is a predominator and we are predominated? Such a conception of rebellion affects us so deeply. We really have to look deep in our hearts and see that rebel cause. We're not rebels without a cause, we're rebels with a cause. Deep in our heart, we don't want that there's a predominator. We don't want to be the predominator. Or we'll compromise. Everyone's a predominator. Now, if everyone's a predominator, who's predominated? How can you be a predominator without the predominator? So if you declare Everyone is Bhagavan. Everyone is the predominator. We've just forgotten. But who's predominating? So there's something in the core of our heart that rebels against the transcendental reality, which is stated throughout the Upanishads. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. The Upanishads state, out of all the eternal entities, there's one supreme eternal, nityo. Chaitanas chaitananam. Out of all the conscious living entities, there's one supreme conscious entity. So how does a beginner discriminate between the supreme eternal, the supreme conscious, and the other eternal conscious entities? The Upanishads give you an easy test. Eka bahunam yo vidyadati kamam. The one, eka, is maintaining all the others. So you want to present yourself as a predominator? Show us how you're maintaining all living entities. It is a symptom of Kali Yuga, as you may know, presented by Shukadeva Swami in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, that in Kali Yuga, Daksham Katumba Bharanam, just for a householder to maintain a partner and one or two children, if that can be done, such a person is considered powerful. Expert. Amazing. You are maintaining a small family. That's the standard of Kali Yuga. What to speak of? Maintaining all living entities? But that is the first way you can distinguish between the supreme eternal and all the other eternals. So this is Upanishad knowledge. Knowledge meant to bring you closer to the supreme absolute truth. Once you understand those concepts in the Upanishads, you're ready for the personal, the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you might say, why don't we study the Upanishads then? Because the Upanishads are actually beyond the mental scope of people these days. To read them all and get to the bottom of it, they're meant for intelligence that doesn't exist today. So if you read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's purports, he quotes extensively from the Upanishads so you can see what's going on. Otherwise, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura said, simply reading the Upanishads unaided on your own in the age of Kali will turn you into an atheist. Because you can't see, you don't have the intellectual clarity to see what's going on. Just like in one verse in the Upanishads, it is stated, Apani Pado Javanogrihito. That the Supreme Absolute Truth has no limbs, has no form. So, the average reader, unaided by proper guidance, looks at that statement and says, just see, here it is. The absolute truth is formless. No hands, no legs. But what about the rest of the verse? Which says, Purusham Mahantam, yet the absolute truth is the greatest person, Purusham. So no hands, no legs means no material hands, no material legs. Just like in the Ishva Upanishad, it says, he has no legs, yet he can walk very far. He has no eyes, yet he sees everything. So this is the way of the Upanishads, trying to build up strength in your intelligence so you can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because this age of Kali has such short lifespans and people's minds are so degraded, they can't make it through the Upanishads to get to Gita Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam without guidance. I remember during my university days, I told you how I decided I wanted to study Hinduism. And I somehow or other transcended the great barrier of the courses meeting at 8 a.m. because students like me, we had a policy never to take a class before 11 a.m. He wanted to make sure we were well rested. But this class made it 8 o'clock, so I decided to make the supreme sacrifice. As I think, how old was I? Maybe 20 years old. I'll get up for an 8 a.m. class. So I went to the class, world famous professor of Hinduism, still world famous. And I listened to his presentation of what the course was going to be about. And then he gave the assignment. Everyone should read a section of the Upanishads and write an essay on what you think it means. I've gotten up so early in the morning just to hear a professor tell me that I should speculate. Right. I can do that at 2 a.m. in the morning with my friends. I need to go to a class at 8 a.m. and have someone tell me to speculate on the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, I dropped the course. Let us take a look in our hearts and see this aversion to the predominator. That's why we can't even see how material nature predominates us. We make all this talk about how we are this, how we are that. Meanwhile, we are just puppets in the hands of the material energy. We're conditioned. We're bound by conditions. This aversion to the predominator is the cause of our material existence. So Vidura is pointing out that by hearing from Maitreya, any issues he had about who is the Supreme Personality of God and what's the relationship with living entities, who are the living entities, it's all been removed by the convincing words of Maitreya Muni. So this gives us insight we're going to discuss about the dynamics that happen when there's proper hearing in a proper sangha, a proper association of devotees. You see, the test that we are hearing properly from a proper source in proper association is that we'll feel encouraged by noting our decrease in material attachment and our increase in attachment to Krishna. We'll hear, and then we'll apply what we hear, and we can see results. So that's encouraging. That encouragement must be there. But if all the other ingredients are correct, if you're hearing from a proper source, and if the sangha, the association of practitioners, is proper, you'll get a transcendental experience. And naturally, you'll feel encouraged. Gradually, that encouragement will turn into a taste. I like this hearing. It's pleasurable. It's pleasurable to hear, and it's pleasurable to apply what I hear. And this way, your whole bhakti lifestyle becomes truly ananda. Not just the pseudo or faddish use of the word ananda, but actual ananda comes. from your tasting the pleasure in executing the instructions of Krishna's devotee. Because Krishna's devotee is instructing you on what Krishna says. Therefore, like at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna presents, I've got the taste. My illusion's gone. I'll act according to what you say. And Sanjaya points out at the end of Bhagavad Gita the glories of anyone who listens to that conversation. How thrilling it is. Hairs are standing on end. A thrill every moment. So now Vidura is also giving his testimony. All my doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. And then he gives a very interesting description of what he's done with his mind. Because generally the mind is so troublesome. You can be, as you often point out, physically comfortable on holidays, but if your mind is disturbed, everything is ruined. Vidura is pointing out, my mind is now perfectly entering into your words. That is true peace. My mind has entered into the words that Maitreya Muni is speaking about the Supreme Absolute Truth. That's how we should hear. We should push our mind to enter into the words that we're hearing. And if those words are about Krishna and the process of attaining Krishna, we'll find peace, fulfillment, and pleasure. Rasayana kata, the talks, will impregnate us with rasa, taste. And actually on the highest level, those talks will impregnate us with our original rasa, our original relationship with Krishna. This is described in the second canto of Bhagavatam. That the sound vibration of Bhagavatam enters into the heart and sits on the lotus of the heart and eradicates any remaining traces of lusts and other impurities. And then your original relationship with Krishna is unfolded just by the sound vibration of Bhagavatam. Swanam eva sarodhinam is stated in the second canto of Bhagavatam. How that sound vibration sits on the lotus of your heart. Very beautiful expression. So rasayana kata, on all levels, there's going to be taste. And you're deriving realization by hearing. Encourages you. Without that encouragement, how are you going to go on? Just, I've got to believe. Why? I've got to believe. Keep the faith. That won't get you very far. By hearing properly and applying what you hear, you'll be encouraged. And that encouragement will keep escalating as long as you keep following properly. The encouragement will keep escalating because the taste keeps escalating. You see clearer and clearer the window, so to speak, that you're looking out becomes cleaner and cleaner. You see more and more. And that encourages you. Especially even in so-called distressful times, you can see how the bhakti practitioner has another perspective, another vision. And indeed, you'll see how you make spiritual advancement even in times of material distress. And that will really encourage you. Let's go to the next verse. read the Sanskrit and look at the verse. Sadveta grahitam vidvam natma maya yanam hare abhatya partam mulam ishkamulam mayat bahi. Again, Maitreya is, he's reacting again, Vidura is reacting to Maitreya Muni's instruction. Do you see, that's the way of the transmission of spiritual knowledge. It's a two-way street. It's not that the listener just sits impassively. No, you respond. And Vidura is teaching you how to respond. He says, translation. Yes. O learned sage, your explanations are very good, as they should be. In other words, because you're authorized, we expect proper explanations, enlightening explanations from you. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. Purport. A living entity's unlawful desire to become one with the Lord in every respect is the root cause of the entire material manifestation. For otherwise, the Lord has no need to create such a manifestation, even for his pastimes. The conditioned soul, under the spell of the external energy of the Lord, falsely suffers many unfortunate incidents in material life. The Lord is the predominator of the external energy, Maya, whereas the living entity is predominated by the same Maya under the material condition. The false attempt of the living entity to occupy the predominating post of the Lord is the cause of his material bondage, and the conditioned soul's attempt to become one with the Lord is the last snare of Maya. So Vidura is presenting, he's giving feedback to Maitreya Muni. I'm showing you I understand because I'm repeating back to you the various themes that you presented to me in depth. Just like Arjuna, he said, Nashta Moha Smriti Lapta. My illusion's gone. My original memory is back. So similarly, Vidura is presenting feedback to Maitreya. I've understood that disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. He understood that just by hearing. Now, let us analyze and see how we may have a prejudice against hearing, and we unconsciously or consciously favor experience. We've discussed this before. The particularly Western notion that experience is the best teacher. If you really want to master something, if you really want to learn the lessons of life, you've got to do it all. And after you do it all in Kali Yuga, then you could be ready to take up spiritual life because you've been there, you've done that. You've got to experience the illusion first before you give it up. Because experience is the best teacher. And we always point out that old saying, probably a British saying, experience is the best teacher, has a second part to it, which everyone neglects. It's long been forgotten in history due to the convenient memory that conditioned souls have. Experience is the best teacher because a fool will learn no other way. All right, so if you're not a fool, how do you learn then? If experience is not the best teacher, and you're not a fool, how do you learn? That is the method of the Vedic process. Hear it. through hearing, you actually experience, but you don't get beat up and incinerated in the process. So it's hard to understand. What do you mean? Just by hearing about something, I become experienced? Hearing means sound goes into your ear, but experience means, well, this is Kali Yuga. What does experience mean? Put the flesh into action. That's experience. But just see how such an artificial distinction you've made. You say experience can't be had by hearing, but experience can be had by using other senses, especially touching. And when you touch enough things in Kali Yuga, then you may get tired of it and decide that we become spiritual. But how can you reach that point of exhaustion just by hearing? But you have made an artificial distinction between one sense and the other, in that you are downgrading what the ears can do and upgrading what the flesh can do, the tactile sensation. This is Kali Yuga. All your faith is in that samsparshaja, skin sensations. Yeah, that's where it's at. That's where the shraddha. That's where the conviction begins, with these skin membranes. Hearing? Evil. The skin? Oh, that's powerful. This is Kali Yuga. It's nuts. In the same way, we make a distinction between hearing about Krishna and seeing Krishna. Yes, there is a distinction in one sense, but in another sense, there's not. You see, on the spiritual platform, in spirituality, there is variety. So there definitely are distinctions, but all the varieties have the effect of Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So in that way, they're all one, even though there are distinctions and variegatedness. Just like in Goloka Vrindavan, they have the seasons. Actually, six seasons, besides winter, spring, summer, fall, also rainy season, and what's called the dewy season. So that's there in Goloka Vrindavan. Distinction. But no matter what season it is and its effects, the end result is simply Krishna's pleasure and the pleasure of his associates. So this is true knowledge of Advaita Gyan, knowledge of non-duality. Non-duality actually doesn't mean in its ultimate sense that everything's just homogeneous, everything is pure oneness. That is the Mayavada misconception. Advaita Gyan, non-duality in its full meaning is that all, in the spiritual world, all the varieties are there. Individuality, personality, the seasons. But there's no material diminishment caused by any of that variegatedness. Everything is one in that everything has the effect of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So when Krishna and the cowherd boys are playing in the forest, whether it's winter or summer, the effect is blissful. Just like you read in Krishna's pastimes that the hot summer sun is overhead. Does that mean, ooh? It's like Sitapati was just telling me his relief in coming to New Zealand from Brisbane because, you know, it's summer there, and he said, as soon as you get up in the morning, you're already sweating. So you think, well, summer heat in Goloka Vrindavan, how could that be conducive for Krishna's pleasure? So the Mayavadi will immediately say, do away with all those distinctions. No summer, no spring, no winter. No Krishna and no Krishna associates. just Brahman, the all-pervading. There is Brahman, but Krishna says it's subordinate to him. So to speak, he's standing on top of it. Therefore, Krishna is referred to as Parabrahman. So, summertime in Goloka Vrindavan. On the one hand, the Shastra describes the heat of the sun. But there's always some other variegatedness that counteracts, so to speak, the heat of the sun. The trees extend their branches like a canopy. Branches with leaves like a canopy over Krishna, the cowherd boys. And then there are caves on Govardhan Hill, where Krishna, and especially Krishna and his intimate devotees, they go into the caves. That way Govardhan Hill does service, providing cool caves and cool, refreshing water. So actually nothing is a disturbance. Everything becomes an opportunity to offer pleasure to Krishna. When the clouds in Goloka Vrindavan see that the sun, in according to their view, because everything in Goloka Vrindavan is a person, according to the view of the clouds, that sun is getting too hot on Krishna and his cowherd boys. Let me come and I'll sprinkle fine droplets of water to refresh Krishna and the cowherd boys. So this is going on all the time. In one sense, there is time in Goloka Vrindavan. In another sense, there's no time. Because the so-called time has no effect of material diminishment, like the time we know about in material existence. Every intelligent person fears time because time deteriorates everything. Deteriorates relationships, deteriorates your body. But the time in Goloka Vrindavan has no material effect. It's like a prop for Krishna's pleasure. Oh, now it's evening time. That means we go with the cows and cowherd boys back to the village of Vrindavan. And the young girls, they're all waiting and watching for Krishna. And when they see him, they look out of the corners of their eyes because they're very chaste. But they look. That's the evening time. Morning time means something else. Sometimes Krishna and the cowherd boys, they have lunch, they have breakfast at their homes, and then they go to the forest, and sometimes they take breakfast out with them to the forest. So all the changing of seasons and changing of times is just there for like props for, let's enjoy this way. Well, now let's enjoy that way. It's evening. That means we do this pleasure pastime. It's morning, we do this pleasure pastime. It's summer, so that means we act like this. It's winter, we act like that. Everything just produces Krishna's pleasure. And because the devotees are perfectly related to Krishna, they share equally in Krishna's pleasure. So this is a tough concept for us to master due to our conditioned rebellious spirit. How you can taste pleasure equal to Krishna and you're not the predominator. This is the mystery of bhakti. Mayavadis can't understand this. If they're so intent that we all are the predominator. Not just me, but you too. I'm not just saying I'm the only one. We are all in it. This is the great mystery of bhakti that can only be understood in the association of devotees. How, by acknowledging Krishna's predominance, you actually can taste the same pleasure as Krishna. In fact, and now we get to the mystery of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna as Lord Chaitanya. He's coming as his own devotee to taste what it's like to be a devotee. Why is that? Because Krishna's a supreme enjoyer, but Krishna knows the devotees enjoy more than he does. He knows the predominated, when they're rightly and perfectly situated in relationship to the predominator, they enjoy more than the predominator. But then, how can Krishna be the supreme enjoyer? He does that as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll come as my own devotee to taste what the devotees taste. And that way Krishna still is a supreme enjoyer. So that is the mystery of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even in India, knowledge of Lord Chaitanya is not common. He's there in all the Shastras. He's there in the Upanishads. He's there in Mahabharata. He's there in Bhagavatam. But unless you are hearing about Krishna in the company of those who understand, you won't see the verses, although they're actually there. They're actually there in the Upanishads. They're there in Mahabharata. They're there in Bhagavatam. Sometimes even our own practitioners, they don't know that Lord Chaitanya is mentioned in Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj talks about Channa Avatar in the seventh canto, the hidden incarnation that comes in Kali Yuga. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj calls Krishna another name is Triyuga. You appear officially in three yugas, but actually, you're there in all four. But in Kali Yuga, you often come as Channa Avatar, hidden. And there are other places in Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto. So, disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. That's mastering one side of the issue. The other side of the issue is to master the realities of Goloka Vrindavan. So bhakti covers both, not simply the negative, but also the positive. Up until a certain point, there's agreement between impersonalists and personalists. There's agreement about the nature of the material world as illusion. So both will agree that disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. But then what's beyond the external energy of the Lord? That's where the divergence is. And how are you going to truly stay out of illusion if you don't know what's beyond illusion? If you say that what's beyond illusion is that we all are a predominator, well, you're in for a surprise. Where are you going to get your taste from? Taste is in relationship. So let us think about Mayur's response to Maitreya. His expression of gratitude, his giving feedback. I understand. This is what you've explained. This is what it's done for me. That kind of reciprocation is necessary in the transcendental process. The same with Arjuna. Krishna asked Arjuna, have you heard everything? Do you understand what I said? Otherwise, Krishna was prepared to repeat the whole teachings of Bhagavad Gita. But Arjuna said, no, I understand. And I've gotten the effect of listening to you. My illusion is gone. I'm ready to act according to what you said. So similarly, Vidura says, all my doubts about the Supreme Personality of God and the living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. My mind is now perfectly entering into them. That's not passive hearing. He's pushing his mind into the lotus flower of the words coming from Maitreya Muni. And therefore that sound vibration has entered into the ear and penetrates to the heart, and it sits upon the lotus flower of the heart.